6'6" above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation, the big sound from underground. We bring the truth to places truth is never heard before. We bring the sound communication of our tribal war. Dark vision fly by helicopters in the night. Attempt triangulation of our station in the fight. Straight from the base, deep down, low precision. High crime treason, we broadcast in sedition. Like the Wall Street morning, afternoon edition. Commandeering airwaves from unknown positions. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and supported. Live and direct, we come.
Hello and welcome to A Public Affair. It's Tuesday. I'm back. Happy New Year, everyone. This is Carousel Baird. Thank you so much for joining me. We have a fabulous show lined up today. We are going to be speaking with State Representative Chris Taylor about her introduction of a bill to address officer-involved shootings. Assembly Bill 409, which she introduced earlier this fall, to try and address concerns that are having in Madison and across the state. Chris, are you with us?
Yes, thank you for having me.
Hello, Chris. Thanks so much for joining us on this freezing day. I have my kids here with me. Where are your kids today? They're not
in school. My kids are at home with a babysitter. we spent yesterday together, and they were so excited that another day of school was canceled, but I think even they are getting antsy.
Yes, everyone misses their friends. Well, I appreciate you taking time. I'm always amazingly impressed with all of us fabulous working women that we juggle it all and we're still standing. So thank you
for doing it.
Yes. Okay. Well, let's talk about your bill, Assembly Bill 409. We'll stop saying the number because who the heck cares? It's about officer-involved shootings.
Right.
What was the prompting? I mean, everyone knows this story, but why don't we sort of back up and talk about what made you introduce this bill?
Sure. Well, last November, now over a year ago.
More than a year ago.
There was an unarmed civilian who was shot by a police officer, and it's fairly unusual circumstances. This person, Paul Heenan, had been out drinking, and he accidentally went into the wrong house. The house he had just moved to, the neighborhood where I live, and the house where he was living looked very similar to a house that was just a few doors down. The neighbors knew him. So when the husband heard that someone was in the house, went down and realized this was his neighbor who had come into the wrong house, and he began to walk him back to his home. In the meantime, the wife had called 911, and so as the neighbor walked Mr. Heenan back to his house, there was a bit of a struggle that ensued between them, and lo and behold, a police officer, Paul Heimson, showed up at the scene and shot Paul when he walked towards him. The police officer had his gun drawn, and Mr. Heenan walked towards the police officer, and he was shot 3 times by the police officer. So I think that whole episode really shook the community where I live, and it certainly obviously shook up the family, the devastated family of Paul Heenan and the friends of Paul Heenan, and really caused me to look closely at that specific incident. And I think there were a lot of problems with that incident. We had what we don't usually have in these incidents is we had a witness to the whole encounter who's had a different interpretation and kind of some different perceptions of what happened than the officer who was involved, who was the other witness. So it really caused me to look closely at the process.
And that's what really your bill, it's not just that this happened, which on itself,
right. Which unfortunately we can't change, but I think my focus was how do we make the process of these investigations be more independent, more transparent. What happens when there is an officer-involved shooting is the department where the officer works is the one that investigates the circumstances.
Well, so that's how it is here in Madison, is it?
Right. It's pretty much like that.
Is that how it is across the state?
Most places. I mean, there's some different protocol that is adopted. The Dane County Sheriff has a protocol that does involve an independent person coming in, and some other departments do use outside investigators. The Department of Criminal Investigations can be called in, DCI, to do the investigation. But for the most part, the tradition has been that it is the actual department where the person worked, where the alleged shooter worked, that investigates. And what I discovered in looking at the process was, you know, everybody knows each other in these departments, just like your colleagues. You know, when I was practicing law, of course I knew all my colleagues in my law firm. People know each other. They may have worked together. They may have been partners together. And yet they're now investigating their colleagues. And there's at least a perception of bias. And I think it's really hard to be independent when you're investigating your colleague, somebody who maybe you came in together, maybe you trained together, maybe you relied on this person at some point to save your life in a circumstance. So I started looking really closely at the process, because what happened with the Paul Heinen case was there were no criminal charges brought, which is pretty high burden to bring criminal charges. But there, it's not just intentional homicide that could have been charged. There's negligence, there's recklessness, none of that was charged, and ultimately that's the decision of the district attorney. There was also an internal review that resulted in no discipline. Now, ironically, the officer is no longer with the department. There were other incidents that were being investigated.
History.
And ultimately, it was recommended by the police chief, Chief Ray, who's now retired, that he be, that he not continue on the force, but that was based on other behavior, this behavior in this specific incident. But I kind of see it as all tied together, quite frankly.
Well,
I think there were, in looking at this so closely, there were definitely warning signs of this officer. So, but my real focus is how do we go forward, and how do we look at a process that people have more confidence in, and that the law enforcement.
So tell me about, what about this process? I know I had, I see you, we both work in Madison, and I remember running into you maybe a half a year ago, mm-hmm. and we were talking about this, and you had said to me, did you read the report? I remember you talking about, so tell me what, when you were reading the process, it's more than just, in theory, the appearance of bias because they're reviewing themselves, but you felt like it was more than just the image of it, that you felt there were just a lot of questions involved.
Well, there were things that were not done. There were certain forensic evidence that was never obtained. I think there was a real delay in questioning the officer because, you know, the philosophy, and I don't necessarily disagree with this, is that the officer has just had a lot of trauma. She just killed somebody. But the same can be
said about any criminal.
It can be applied towards this witness.
Sure.
This neighbor who just witnessed his neighbor
being shot. Anybody that's ever a suspect. Right.
Yes,
anyone that's ever a suspect.
They don't get 3 days to kind of process it. So I just felt like there was a lot of inequality.
We're holding our police officers to a different standard than other suspects of actions.
I felt that way. That philosophy, you know, does translate. There is trauma. Obviously, it's a horrible thing. No police officer, and I should add, I think being a police officer is the hardest job in the world.
Incredibly,
I mean, there are
difficult.
They have to deal with so many circumstances that they can't predict. So I have a lot of respect for our law enforcement officers. But I did feel like there were some different standards being applied. That, you know, this witness, this neighbor, there was no time. I mean, his kids were woken up. His family was interviewed. This is, you know, 3 a.m. And there was he didn't get any consideration in that way. And I also felt that the report, when I looked at it, and this is the internal review report, that it was so focused, it seemed to me, on discrediting the civilian witness, that there were some real big questions that were not addressed in it. So that was just my interpretation of what had happened. I thought there were real holes in it, in the report that came out. I thought there were things that were very, very questionable. And so I think those questions that I had, and that I also heard from my community, we had so many community forums on this incident because it really, really was devastating for the community. It really, really was. And I couldn't go anywhere where I didn't talk to somebody during those first months after the shooting where someone didn't bring it up to me that isn't there a better way forward here? Isn't there something we can do? So that did really cause me to look, and what I started to do was look at all kinds of models all over the country who had adopted a more independent investigatory model, whether that be appointing a board to look at things, appointing some kind of ombudsman to look at things that was independent. But interestingly enough, most of these models had been adopted at the municipal level. There was almost no state that had adopted a model for what should happen when there's an officer-involved death. The only state that had attempted to do so was Maine, and they hadn't been able to get it passed, although I thought that they had a very good framework. So luckily, there was a Republican colleague, Gary Bice, who also was looking at this issue. He's a former deputy sheriff, so he has a lot of credibility with law enforcement. He has a long tenure in law enforcement, and he was really interested, too, in looking at the investigation and making sure, because if that investigation, that initial criminal investigation, if that is not done right, nothing that stems from it is right. If you don't have a fair, thorough investigation. So we started working on this bill, on our bill, and what the bill requires is that when there is an officer-involved death, whether it be a shooting, whether it be some kind of in-custody death, we had a horrible incident in Milwaukee where a man died in the back of a police car because he didn't get appropriate medical attention. He was ignored. He suffocated in the back of a police car. So that wasn't really the officers there. That was a lack of doing something, right? Mm-hmm. But that would fall under the scope.
A death or an injury due to an officer-involved action. Or inaction.
In-custody death, action, or omission. Right. An in-custody death or something where there was certain action taken or not action taken that led to the death. So we're still kind of tweaking this bill a little bit to make it clear when it applies. But basically what the bill does is say, look, when there is some kind of officer-involved death, there has to be two independent investigators brought in from outside the department. So that's one of the pieces. The second piece is establishing a board, an independent board that reviews the criminal investigation and doesn't have any authority to make charging decisions, because that really is the constitutional prerogative of the district attorney, but does have the authority to make some recommendations to the district attorney.
The more questions be asked or more investigations or,
exactly.
or sort of take an additional outside view of the facts to point in one direction or another.
Right, and to say, well, was that piece really looked at closely? Was all the evidence gathered? Looking at the forensics, which I think, you know, there were some gaps in the Paul Heenan situation. So really just making sure that the investigation was done thoroughly and comprehensively and that there aren't questions that linger. Because it's really the questions that linger, I think, that make people suspicious of the process. And it's just this inherent kind of bias when you're investigating your own colleagues. You know, when I was practicing law, if there was some kind of ethical complaint brought against me, thankfully there never was, but if there had been, it would not have been my colleagues at my law firm investigating me. Because these are my colleagues. These are people you have relationships, you have personal relationships with, and it's very hard for anybody to maintain objectivity and impartiality.
Let's talk about that piece for a second, because I would think that there have to be some police officers that would appreciate this on some level being taken off of their plate. You know,
I think there are.
I mean, police officers do an amazing job. It's an understatement what you and I have said, that it is a hard job.
Yeah.
It is a heroic, impossible job on some days. It's a job that I will say out loud, I could never imagine doing. It's that scary and hard for me. It's just incredibly difficult and honorable, and we appreciate that police officers exist. However, because there's that sense of difficulty and they understand things in their world that I think, you know, me on the outside doesn't understand, they have this bias and this view that I would think they'd appreciate not having to review their own colleague.
I think there are some, and I've heard from some officers who are very supportive of this, who, you know, in any profession, there are bad actors. It doesn't matter what profession you're
yes.
in. Although most police officers obviously want to be fair, and they are fair, and want to do their jobs, with the utmost integrity. Of course, those are the vast majority of police officers, but you do get bad actors.
In every profession. Of course.
There's, in any profession.
There's unethical people, and these unethical people in the world have jobs.
Right. And we have examples of that. It's we have the Michael Bell example down in Kenosha with what happened. Michael Bell Jr. Was a young man who was killed, shot in the head by a police officer, and there was a massive cover-up in that investigation. And his father, Michael Bell Sr., is someone who's really very, very active in leading the crusade for this bill.
And
he's somebody who came around, and I think he got Representative By's interest in this issue. And he has just been...
He won more than $1 million
in a civil lawsuit. With what
yep.
happened to his son. But, nothing will bring your child back.
Of course not.
I mean, that's the end of the day. So what we want to do... I mean, obviously you want to prevent this from ever happening, and that starts with training, and that starts with a lot of pieces at the front end, right? Because you do want to get to a point. But as we said, there are situations, you're probably always going to have incidents of this happening because law enforcement officers are confronted on a daily basis with dangerous situations. So you're never going to alleviate it completely. But what we really wanted to do with our bill is just set some parameters, some very broad parameters, to make the process better, to make it a process people have faith in, to make it a process that law enforcement accepts, because we don't want to impose something on them that they don't think is going to work. But getting back to your original point, I do think there is support for this. And I can say, the Madison Police Department has adopted now a protocol where they all are bringing in
outside
some independent.
That was announced in November by Acting Chief Graber.
Right. And, I met with him, and I think part of that has been spurred along because they see this bill and they see the writing on the wall. The public wants this. The public is very supportive. Now, law enforcement, I think, probably less supportive because they, from their perspective, as I said, they do a good job. They try to be fair. So I understand that perspective, and I respect it. However, there's a public perception, too. And if law enforcement doesn't have that legitimacy in communities, they cannot do their jobs. So it's really, really critical that law enforcement has the trust of the communities that they police. And it's really, really critical that that there is that respect going both ways, or it's very, very hard for law enforcement to do their jobs and for the civilian community to trust what they do. So I think this bill is just a little step towards making it a better process. And I'm hopeful it got a hearing. We heard the testimony that was presented at this hearing and some of the abuses in these investigations that have occurred, not just in the Michael Bell case, but in the Derek Williams case in Milwaukee. When that young man did not get treatment that he needed when he was suffocating in that police car, and the heartbreak of his family and his mother came to testify. And you listen to these stories, and I just think that we have enough of these incidents now at the statewide level that it's incumbent upon us as state policymakers to look at a statewide framework. But it's not going to be easy to get it passed, I should add. It's not. We're still working on it. There's probably going to be an amendment on the bill to address some concerns that have been brought to us. But I think it's a really positive step in the right direction.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that procedure. But first, this is Carousel Baird. You're listening to A Public Affair. I'm having a fabulous talk today with Representative Chris Taylor about her bill introduced to investigate the death when there's an officer-involved shooting. So let's take a step back for a second. The bill was introduced in October,
right.
Just this year, 2013, I guess last year. The hearing was in, a public hearing was in December.
Right.
But there has been a few voices speaking out against this. The mm-hmm. Attorney General Van Hollen when there were, I think even before the bill was introduced, there was talk of the bill being introduced, had said that it is unnecessary and adds a layer of bureaucracy.
Right. Yeah, he made those comments right the day after the bill was introduced. And kind of the frustrating part, I think, from my perspective and from Representative Bai's perspective, was we did reach out, and we had been talking to the Department of Justice, and they did have some concerns, mostly about the board, the independent board that this bill establishes to look, just look, have another second look at the investigation, so, just as a second check.
What's sort of the challenge that they don't like the makeup of the board?
Or? I'm not sure. I never quite got it. I think they didn't say specifically. So, you know, our response to them was, well, look, give us your feedback. What kind of system would you like to see? How do you make this better? And I don't think we've ever heard from them. I certainly haven't heard from them how to improve the bill. It kind of was a very knee-jerk response. And I'm disappointed by it. I was very disappointed by it because I do think it's illustrative of a schism that we see between law enforcement and the civilian community. And, you know, I think why I was disappointed with the Attorney General's statement, not just that he dismissed the bill so quickly, but it secondly indicated to me a complete lack of understanding of where the public is on this issue and how when you go to talk to people in the public, they think it's crazy that police officers investigate their own. In 125 years in Wisconsin of looking at what police officers have ever been charged in an officer-involved death situation, we can only find one instance in 125 years. Now, that's a pretty good and possibly good track record, if you ask me.
Impossibly good, right.
So what that indicates is, no, there is problems with this process. This is not a fair process. This doesn't give the public what the independence that they want and the confidence in the system that they want. But what the Attorney General in his statement did was really ignore that piece, that it's not just about law enforcement. It's about the communities that really want a change in the process, that don't see the fairness in the process. So, you know, what we want to keep doing, though, is obviously, and I know that Representative Bies, I believe, has had some continued conversations with the DOJ. I have not heard any specifics about what they want to see changed in the bill or how to make the bill better. This is a bill of first impression. No other state has tried this bill. And some people have used that against us, saying, well, isn't that an indication that should not be legislative?
Yeah, it's an indication of how difficult this hurdle is you're trying to mount and how satisfied we should be of the leadership of you and Representative Bies to take this on.
Well, you know, I think it's a couple things. It is tough because you do want to craft a bill, as I said, that has the meat to it, but it also has got to be accepted by the law enforcement community because I think their buy-in is really, really critical, and that's why we've talked to so many.
Is that possible? I know, you've said that on the show right now, and I know Representative Bies has said that in the end you need something law enforcement and the public can both mm-hmm. embrace. And I know sometimes when you're crafting legislation, sometimes you have to do less than you wanted to so that you can make an inroad and make progress. Do you see that there's compromises that don't water down, maybe in the sense of what you talked about, how the committee itself, the board, is formed or created?
Well, I do think you always have to be prepared to compromise. I mean, that is just what you have to do, and you know that, you know, being on the county board, that you don't ever get it. You don't ever get everything that you want. I do think it's possible to maybe tweak the bill a little bit to address some of the concerns and still get a bill that moves us in the direction that we want to go in. But it might be at the end nobody's happy, which sometimes happens, you know, because it's not strong enough. I mean, from my community, I hear, well, we want this bill to be stronger. We want there to be a public member on the board, which I don't disagree with at all. So we heard some of that testimony, that we want it to be stronger. You know, we heard, I think most of the testimony that we heard at the hearing was very, very supportive. There was an overwhelming number of people who came out to support the bill. There were some people who didn't support it, but you know, when you get into specifics about, well, what is it you don't support, that was a little more hazy to me. What it, you know, it seems to be that there are some, there's some concern about this board, this statewide board. How are they going to be composed? What's the composition of the board? So we are going back and re-looking at that. But I think it's possible to get to a place where, you know, maybe not everybody loves it, but it's at least accepted, and that there are some things that, you know, you usually do have to compromise.
Was there challenge of, so your bill has a couple different pieces to it, and one of the pieces talks about taking a blood sample.
Right. We had to be careful with that, you know, because there is, I think that's a no-brainer, personally, but there are constitutional issues there that you cannot compel somebody to self-incriminate. So I think we dealt with it pretty well, is that we did allow the sample to be drawn, and yet to access that sample, you have to have a search warrant. So in order to use that sample and test it, you have to have a warrant.
So you at least get the evidence before it doesn't exist anymore, and then you can argue in court whether you have a right to have the results or not.
That's right, to actually get to use that in some kind of, you know, criminal context. So I do think that that was a balance. You know, it's preserving the evidence that I think is relevant, but it's not compelling people to incriminate themselves and somehow forfeiting their constitutional rights, which we definitely wanted to be careful about.
Does the Madison public trust the police right now?
You know, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think I live in a community and hear from people who have told me they will not call the police. You know, but I do think the police, I think that we have a long history of the Madison police really being exemplary in their protocol. You know, going back to David Cooper in the early 70s, how they dealt with protests. So I do think we have a long tradition of having a great partnership between law enforcement and the public. I think it's been hurt a little bit with all of these. You know, we've had 3 officer-involved shootings in the last year, which is more than we've ever had. So I do think it's been hurt a little bit. It certainly has been hurt in the community where I live. Of course, that's not all of Madison, but I do think it has been damaged a bit where I live. And that's not good. And I think that law enforcement doesn't want that. They want to have the credibility to do their jobs in the communities that they police. So I do think it has been a little bit, but I, you know, what we want to get to a place where there's a process that helps maintain that healthy relationship that needs to be maintained to have an effective law enforcement. So that's really where we're trying to go, I think, with this bill and address some of the concerns that we've seen in the public. But I don't know. You know, I'd be curious. I certainly don't represent all of Madison. I have the Near East Side and downtown and some of the Near West Side. But I do think people are looking at what's going on and trying to figure out some of the why things are happening, how they happen. And look, any process can be improved. I mean, there's not any profession in the world that can't be improved, and different processes that they use can't be improved, particularly when you're talking about these life or death situations where we have to be so careful so that important trust is maintained.
Do you feel like there's a sense of collaboration that some people at least are willing to work with you and to talk with you about the situation?
Sure. I mean, nobody had said, you know, I've met with the sheriff's office. I just met with our interim police chief. Absolutely. I mean, people are certainly willing to give feedback. They're willing to talk. Are we always going to agree? No, we're not. But I think being somebody not in law enforcement, being someone who really came to this issue because of this horrible incident in my community and really seeing the grief of my community, it's very, very helpful to talk to law enforcement and to get that feedback. I think, you know, sometimes there may not be that willingness to even consider any changes. But that's not really the feedback that I've received mostly from law enforcement. I think there has been a willingness to engage in a discussion and to provide education to myself and to Representative Bies about what the reality is for law enforcement officers. So I do feel like people have been very, very open to discussing the issue. Now, is this loved by all law enforcement? Absolutely not. It's not loved.
Well, nothing ever is. But
yeah,
but that's
ever
helpful.
Is.
That
no, and there are some people who really hate it, frankly. And the interim police chief told me that.
But if you're having a conversation, at least we're moving in a direction.
I think so. And I think as painful as this incident was, I'm very hopeful that something good can come out of it, that there is a conversation. And, you know, honestly, it's a conversation even after whatever happens with this bill. It's a conversation that needs to continue because I do believe there is this schism between the perceptions of civilians and the perceptions of police officers. You know, one question that came up so many times in the Paul Heenan situation at our community forums was, why did you shoot him to kill him? Why did you shoot him in the leg? Why did you use a stun gun? You know, and to law enforcement, they're trained a certain way. They're trained to shoot in a certain way when they feel there's a threat. And so just trying, you know, those are, and that's from the civilian perspective, I really understand that question. When you look at that case, you think, here's a guy who's unarmed. Why don't you shoot him in the foot to stop him from advancing and taking your weapon? And so it's those kind of conversations that I still feel, and I brought this up to the interim police chief, I think there's a lot of value in those conversations so that we can continue to talk and understand each other.
Understand what's happening. We have a call coming in. Thank you so much for waiting. Thank you for calling. Tell us your name and your question.
My name is Methuselah. First of all, one point I wanted to make. I've noticed that since Cooper's departure, there have been very few cases where aggressive disciplinary action was been pursued against the bad apples. Cooper was fairly aggressive about doing that. I don't think any of his successors have been nearly as aggressive, and in fact have been obstructive in the process. And I have read the 118 pages regarding the officer who was finally terminated because of the shooting. They're really incredible. You wonder how somebody like that was able to get through all the hoops and was able to stay on the job for as long as he did based on the idiotic nature and offensive nature of the remarks he was making. And then my question is this. I'm wondering if the bill should not include certain other problems that I've observed regarding law enforcement behavior. One that concerns me is the fact that routinely police forces operate outside the borders of their respective jurisdictions. That's particularly true in the campus area and also areas bordering Maple Bluff and Sherwood Hills. And I find having to deal with the Sherwood Hills or Maple Bluff officer while I'm technically still in Madison particularly offensive because of the elitist nature of those two communities. And then finally, another area that needs much more attention is the role of police forces that are run by universities. And right now, I think the channels for accountability for those are very, very limited, and the level of power that they have, since they answer only to the chancellor of a university, is really quite high, and that's an issue that deserves a lot more attention than it's been getting. And I'll just take my comments off the air, and thanks for an important program on this issue.
Thanks for your questions, and I think, Chris, it brings up even a sort of a broader idea of, are there more issues that when you've spent so much time in your community and listening to your constituents talking about this issue, do you think of more bills or more solutions along the way?
Right. Yeah, no, thank you so much for the question. I really, really appreciate it. You know, I think from Representative Bies and my perspective, we knew that it was going to be very difficult to get our bill passed with the limited. That's why we really tried to focus on the three areas that we thought were most critical. First being making sure these investigations are independent. Second being an overview at oversight board. Third being this blood alcohol testing that we thought was really, really critical. But it's not the be end and end all bill. I mean, it's the first step, I think. you know, the bill doesn't address at all the internal investigatory process, which there's a lot of issues there as well. This is just the criminal investigation, you know, because most, and the caller made a reference to this, there's also an internal review where the police department looks at whether there were internal rules that were violated. And on that side of the equation, too, you get very few, very, very few instances where departments are finding that their officers violated internal protocols. So that's another piece that I'm actually working on. That bill is not ready, though, yet. So, no, this is the tip of the iceberg. There are many, many other issues, as a caller indicates, that could be addressed. Some of this is addressed, you know, when you're talking about jurisdictional issues, you know, I would hope those things are being addressed at the local level, that those kinds of jurisdictional issues are being addressed at that level. So some of it might not rise to the level of a statewide response, but they're really, really critical issues and really, really critical questions. But this bill is just one little step, frankly, in trying to address the most egregious elements that we see, recognizing it's still going to be tough to get this kind of bill passed, even with all the public support.
Representative Taylor and I would love additional comments and questions. You can give us a call at area code 608-256-2001 or toll-free, area code 866-899-WORT. Send us a tweet at WORT Talk or on Facebook. Our page is A Public Affair, 89.9 FM Madison. Well, Chris, excuse me, there was, I know that former Madison Police Captain Sherry Maples has spoken out and been helpful in some of this. And
right.
A statement that she had made, I'm quoting her, I'm quoting an article in the Cap Times from earlier this year. Quote, if this was justified by police standards, we need to change our standards.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that. Has there also been some, especially since you made reference to other bills, perhaps in the future, you know, one step at a time. But is there a conversation about looking at, if all of this is justified, maybe we need to change the rules a little bit?
Right, right. Well, you know, an interesting thing, and I've talked to Sherry Maples, and actually former police chief David Cooper did come to the hearing and gave testimony in support of the bill. You know, there's a couple other issues that are big issues, and I do want to get back just briefly because I should have mentioned this with the last caller. The other kind of issue that has come up when you look at Officer Hymesness and his history, which is very, very troubling when you look at it, is why wasn't there intervention and support earlier for this officer?
He has a long history when they investigated it of violations.
Right. He had used excessive force in two other instances when there were payouts to two other people.
And been accused in multiple times.
And been accused and had a long history of, you know, some shocking statements, frankly. So that's the other issue, is how do you get support? Obviously, policing is such a stressful job. How do you get that support for the officers? Get them what they need so that they continue to be healthy and they continue to be able to be effective as law enforcement. And I really think that did not happen in this case, because this officer, I think you can look at various points and think, wow, he really needed some help. He needed some help. He needed some support. He needed some intervention. And that did not happen, unfortunately. So that is the other piece. We don't address that in the bill, but it is another really important piece. But getting back to Sherry Maples and some of what the caller referenced, you know, he referenced David Cooper. One of the changes, and I'm going to try to explain this. I didn't explain this very well in another instance, so I'm going to try to explain this better. You know, there's a criminal standard for liability for a police officer that's very, very high. You know, you have to really have a lot of proof and a lot of evidence if you're going to bring criminal charges.
To get to the level that the district attorney would
bring
charges.
The level that the district attorney would use. So that is a high burden. But what it seems to me has happened on the internal review side is the departments that are internally reviewing what happened and whether there was a violation to what their own standards are, if they're using that criminal
standard. They've adopted these incredibly strict standards, exactly.
Yes. that, and I think that one thing that David Cooper did, and I don't want him to speak about this because I haven't actually personally talked to him, but my perception is that when he was there, he made it a real high standard to use force. He made it a very, very high standard. And it wasn't this, it's very, very hard, you know, to meet that criminal standard, as I said. And so I believe when he was there, that wasn't the standard, that he held his officers to a very, very high standard in the use of deadly force. And then in the evaluation process, you know, it wasn't, well, we have to find, beyond a reasonable doubt that this protocol was violated. But I think what has really happened, and my impression is definitely in reading the reports, the internal review in the Paul Heenan case, is that the standard now being used for these internal reviews is the criminal standard, which means you're not going to find violations.
Not only are there
a tough standard.
Not only are there not going to be criminal charges, but there's not even going to be internal or civil penalties
right.
for your actions.
Right, that's right. And so I do think that...
Which undermines the whole point of why would there be an internal review if they're going to just mimic what the district attorney does.
Right. I think that that's something that Chief Cooper did bring, that he brought this higher standard. There has to be a higher standard evoked because you don't want to use deadly force unless it's absolutely necessary. And I think along the way that has been watered down a bit.
Chris, we have some calls coming in. Thank you so much for waiting. Please tell us your name and your question.
My name's Mark, and I'm calling from Chicago. The question, the observation I had is that opponents of the bill talk about the bill adding to bureaucracy for law enforcement, but it seems to me the opposite happens when you have these questionable incidents, because if they're not investigated thoroughly and transparently at the outset, that leads to more bureaucracy,
right?
Because you have civil lawsuits, you have public hearings, you have all this media coverage, you have, you know, possible Department of Justice investigations. And so by these incidents not being thoroughly investigated by some kind of outside agency, it actually increases bureaucracy and slows down the process. Secondly, I did attend the hearing on the 12th, and it seemed to me that the opponents of the bill really didn't have any strong arguments against it other than maintaining the status quo, because that's what we've done. You know, we had the status quo for 125 years, and why change it now? And that, to me, is not a recipe for progress. And lastly, hearing some of the testimony at the hearing was searing. You know, the Officer Heinzmus in Madison had 100-plus violations, and yet he was still on the force. And he was emailing other officers that he was going to shoot somebody, and he did. And how a guy like that could fly under the radar is a ringing contradiction of the status quo. Similarly, in the Michael Bell case, you had multiple breaches in protocol bordering on criminal behavior. The officers weren't sequestered after they shot Michael Bell. The witnesses weren't thoroughly interviewed. The district attorney rubber-stamped the process. And lastly, in the incident in Milwaukee, you had a man not only suffocate in the backseat of a police car, but he was begging for help. He was saying, "Officer, I can't breathe. I need some help." They didn't help him, and there was no wrongdoing found there. Mm-hmm. And again, you had a close relationship between the DA and the police in that incident. So, just a few observations that this bill and this kind of progress is long overdue and really needs to be addressed. And I think Wisconsin could lead the nation in bringing attention to something like this. Thanks,
Chris. Those comments and questions make me specifically think. Do people have these levels of violations all the time? I mean, are there police? Is it just common because it's a stressful job that police officers have? Does every police officer out there have 25 violations just because?
I don't think so. And I really do appreciate the caller, and I'm really glad that he was at the hearing. No, I don't think that's the case. I mean, I think that if you look at these three incidents, what happened was a cover-up, really. And it seemed to me like it involved the office, multiple officers. I mean, even in the Derek Williams case, they tried to plant drugs on him. And, you know, you listen to this stuff. I mean, I think that the caller's description of the testimony is searing. I mean, it was heartbreaking, heart-wrenching to listen to the family members talk about what happened to their loved ones. And it was just a process that was totally corrupt and totally abused.
Chris, did you just, you said these three examples are of a cover-up. So do you think that the Paul Heenan shooting is a cover-up?
Well, I should be careful. I'm sorry. I think I'm really more talking about Derek Williams and the incident with Michael Bell. That I think there was evidence there.
Of cover-ups.
There definitely
those,
was
yes.
evidence there. This, I don't, you know, I can't say this was a cover-up. I think there were things that were not adequately investigated. And I think, as a caller recognized, you had this history
right.
that, you know, this history, you can see kind of it bubbling and it erupting.
And his point about we created more bureaucracy because they didn't address all these questions.
Right.
Even
Absolutely.
If there was no bias.
It is a no great one's, point.
They didn't address these questions. It's not that there was a cover-up. It was an omission.
Right.
And now they have to answer for that omission.
Right. No, I think that it's a point that we have tried to make, too. It's like, no, this is actually, at the end of the day, probably going to save taxpayers money because you're not going to be, hopefully, in federal court in a lawsuit. You're not going to have a federal investigation. You're not going to have years and years. I mean, if you look at some of these cases, if you look at the Michael Bell case, the years and years and years of looking at that case and resources that were on from the state level because it wasn't done right the first time. So I do think you talk about bureaucracy. This is really trying to make the process better. So on the front end, you have a better product that people have trust in, that people can have some confidence mm-hmm. in. So I absolutely agree with that. And it's interesting, too, I think the observation about the testimony against really was maintaining the status quo. I think, you know, I made that point previously that I wasn't quite sure what the specific objection was. From some of it, there was an attorney who came who represents police officers, and he didn't really have any good opposition except just opposition to the concept. But we didn't hear any kind of real specific opposition to the bill at the public hearing. And at the same time, you heard that just this testimony from family members that was just heartbreaking. And I think more than ever, I came away from the hearing saying, yeah, this is hard. This is a hard issue to work on. There's a lot of people who aren't supportive and are mad about this bill, but I think there's far more who are supportive and happy, finally, that we're addressing some of these issues that have been present in our state, but not just present in our state, present all around the country, these incidents happen.
You know, we have just a few more minutes. I wanted to point out that there has been progress in part because of the introduction of this bill and the conversations that you're having. You know, since the killing of Paul Heenan, there have been two more officer-involved shootings here in Madison that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. One on May 17th, 2013. In that situation, the three officers involved, the state was called mm-hmm. to do the investigation.
Right.
And
right.
then when there was another shooting in August 17th, 2013, the three officers there, their blood was taken. Blood samples were taken. Mm-hmm. So that there have been sort of progress steps being made. And do you think that there's more satisfaction that those investigations were more accepted by the community because of that?
Yeah, I do think. I think it does go to that legitimacy that we're really trying to establish with this bill. Yeah, and I think just, you know, looking at the Madison Police Department, that they're changing some of their protocols. And I think it was in direct response to this bill. I think that is really, really satisfying. You know, I think the challenge is going to be to make sure that we have this level of transparency and this level of independence in every case, not just
when they choose to do it.
Not just municipality by municipality. Because, you know, this is an issue in Madison, but this is an issue in Dwarf County. I mean, this is an issue all over the state where you've had these incidents. So my hope with this bill is bringing an accepted protocol, an accepted framework. So you don't have to, you know, have the luck of what municipality you're in to get the transparency and the independence that we're trying to establish, but that there is an expectation in every municipality that these protocols are going to be observed. And, you know, we really tried not to micromanage this stuff. I mean, we said bring in two outside investigators. We didn't dictate who that is. We left that to the discretion of the police department. So we're really trying just to set a general framework under which all investigations of officer-involved deaths have to occur. So you get that transparency and that fairness regardless of where you live in the state.
What are the next steps for the bill?
The next steps for the bill is really trying to address any specific concerns that are raised. You know, as I said, there was some concerns raised about the composition of this board. You know, my constituents really want to see a public member. Law enforcement really wanted to see more active law enforcement, not necessarily retired people, so we'll be looking at that issue more closely. So that is one thing that we do need to have to go back and look at. But I think after that, you know, the next step is really to try to get this bill a vote, to get it out of committee, and then bring the bill to the floor. And, you know, we're winding up here, our legislative floor periods end in March. So it's really, really critical that your listeners and people out there and your listeners' friends and family contact their legislators to express support for the bill and to express that they want to see this bill move, because that really is what makes a difference at the end of the day if constituents are contacting their legislators. And all legislators need to hear it, both Democrats and Republicans.
And there's sponsors on the Senate level as well?
Mm-hmm. Right. And we have, you know, this is a real bipartisan bill, which is great. So we'll be pushing to get it moving in the Senate, getting a hearing in the Senate. But, you know, our real focus right now is to try to bring it to the Assembly floor, get it out of committee and bring it to the Assembly floor and get the momentum that we need to get it through the Senate.
Well, we've been talking today with State Representative Chris Taylor about her bill proposed to increase external investigations of law enforcement agencies when there is a death resulting from an individual in custody of that with that law enforcement agency. Chris, thank you so much for introducing this bill. It's been a great conversation. I really appreciate all you have to say and sharing it all. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's been a great hour. Thank you to Rachel for engineering this hour and Lois for taking our phone calls. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening.